When Krishna wanted to come manifest his pastimes, Lord Brahma said, I want to render some service. So then he became the four faces of Varsana. He has four faces and there's four hills. Vilaskar, Dangar, Mangar, and what's his name? But then Lord Shiva, he wanted to also render some service. So he said, my Lord, can you have your pastimes on me? Can you render your pastimes? So then, of course, Lord Shiva manifested himself as Nandishwar Hill. And then Nanda Baba made his palace there, and Krishna advented in Gokul, and then he came there and had so many pastimes. So that's, the Lord has come there, Lord Shiva has come there to render service in that way. And then all over the Vrindavan, Lord Shiva is manifested in different principal shilas. So I want to discuss those five principal forms of Lord Shiva in Vrindavan. And then maybe we can discuss some pastimes that are known to us. So first of all, Lord Shiva is very, very close to the Lord because ultimately, as I mentioned, he's a direct expansion from Sankarshan, Balaram to Sankarshan, Sadashiva, and then Sadashiva expands as the Rudras and Shivas of this world for different functions. But we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita when it describes Lord Shiva, you see the vast difference between Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma or any of the other demigods. They're all devotees, and they render wonderful service. I mean, Brahma, he's the creator, and he's the Adi Guru. Of course, Lord Shiva is also Guru, in terms of Balaram being the original Guru. But Krishna first spoke this knowledge to Lord Brahma, then Brahma spoke it to Narada, like that. But Lord Shiva, he has all the knowledge within him. And we see that when Krishna is dealing with, throughout in the Bhagavatam and other places, when Brahma comes on the scene, he gives boons sometimes to people like Haranyakashipu, got a boon from Brahma. And that caused a lot of problems for Prahlad Maharaj and for the saintly people in general and for the universe, for the demigods. Then Lord Nrisimhadev had to come. And Lord Nrisimhadev didn't have much to say to Lord Brahma. In fact, Lord Brahma was completely afraid of Lord Nrisimhadev, and he was hiding because he thought, oh, I gave this terrible benediction. So they were pushing, they pushed Lakshmi there, the wife of Nrisimhadev, and said, here, please calm him down. He's seething with anger. I'm afraid he's going to kill all of us also. Well, especially Brahma was afraid. And so Lakshmi said, I don't know who this is. I don't recognize this person with all these arms and these long teeth and everything. I never saw my husband like that. So then Prahlad Maharaj went there. He was able to pacify his beloved Lord with his sweet devotion. And then Indra, of course, you know, he came and so much rain was there. And then after the Govardhan Leela, and he was embarrassed and felt very shameful. And not only shameful, but extremely frightened. Because he thought the Lord would retaliate against him and finish him off completely. So Lord Indra was hiding and kept really quiet and hid for many years. And he felt really bad. He couldn't sleep at night and he couldn't digest his japan bhog and he couldn't enjoy any of the pleasures of Indraloka. So then he consulted with his Gurudev and they said, look, you made a grave offense to the Brijvasis and the Lord. You better go there. So in these different ways, Krishna ignores these demigods. He doesn't pay much attention to them, or sometimes he chastises them for giving boons to demons. But Lord Shiva, as Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Lord Shiva is always giving boons because he's Ashutosh. Ashutosh means easily pleased, Ashu and Tosh, easily satisfied. And so with a couple of Bilva Patras and a little Ganga water, he's like completely happy. He says, I own the Mol Shivai, and he offers three little leaves on his head and some insignificant poisonous datura phal, some bale fruit or this poisonous, what's the datura phal, the fruit of the datura plant, which is all spiky and it's like a piece of cactus or something. You ever see? You know, it's round and green. It's not, I don't know what kind of fruit it is, but it's about that big and it's round and green. It has all these spikes like a porcupine going all outside of it. And you put that, and you go, okay, Lord Shiva, put that on his head. And then the flowers from that, this is the traditional worship of Lord Shiva, worshiping him as the Ishvara of Tamagun and the Bhuteshwar and Pibaleshwar and Rangeshwar and all those different names he has. He's generally worshipped like that by Shiva Bhaktas. But we see from our Vaishnava Acharyas that they worship Lord Shiva with a different mood, a little sweeter mood, Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu, as the greatest of the Vaishnavas. So Vaishnavas, we don't put, you know, spikes on their head like Jesus Christ or something. You know, when he was crucified, they put a wreath of thorns on his head. You know, thorns, you know, like bubble tree, you know, bubble tree? Long thorns. They said, oh, you're the king of the Jews, huh? Ah, well, if you're a king, you should wear a crown, no? So, okay, here's a nice crown for you. And they had this, some of these bramble kind of things that they use for fences and farms, you know, the stickers, you know, the thorns. They put that on his head and they pushed it down so spikes went all into his head and cut his head, and that was like a preliminary, you know, taste of crucifixion. So, you know, if you put something like that on, Lord, you know, some Vaishnava's head, he won't be too happy. So Lord Shiva, he's happy. Oh, he's Ashutosh. You give him that, you can give him some poisonous, insignificant, spiky thing like that. But the Acharyas say that we worship great Vaishnavas, so rather than offering him Daturafal, we offer him para. We put yogurt on his head and milk on his head, and then we offer him para or sandesh. And then rather than giving him some poisonous flower, Datura Pushpa, which is this little kind of purpley flower that doesn't smell like anything, we offer him gulab mala, some rose mala or something like this. And then I've seen, although I'm shy to do it myself because the British Basis will just jump up and down and crack you. So I know that some of our Acharyas, Gaudi Acharyas, they do full parikrama of Lord Shiva. They go all the way around. And they say that we worship him as a Vaishnava. And Vaishnava is pura parikrama. You go all the way around three times. You read in the Bhagavatam that we go three times around the Vaishnava before we depart them, and like this. Or the cow, Namo Brahmani Devaya Go Brahmani Taija Jagadataya Krishna Govindaya Namo. The cow and the Brahmins and the Lord, they're circumambulated fully and being very careful not to step on their shadow if there's a shadow there due to the presence of sun or light. And that's a respectful way to honor the cow and the Vaishnava and the Supreme Lord at least three times. But in the description of the worship of Lord Shiva, it's explained Ardha Parikrama. Ardha Parikrama. Ardha means half. And the reasoning is that you should never step over the yoni. There's the linga and the yoni. Linga is Shiva and yoni is Parvati. And the bathing is done there. All these things are offered to Shiva. Then he gives his remnants to Parvati. And Parvati distributes those remnants to others. And you know, she, and not only does she distribute remnants, but she distributes, you know, the living entities. Because from her, she's the accommodating chamber for all her garbha or her womb is the accommodating chamber for all the living entities. They ultimately expand from Mahavishnu through the carrying Shambhu's, the glands carrying all the living entities from Mahavishnu. He impregnates Pradhan or the womb of material energy, which is personified as the yoni or the womb of Parvati. Then Parvati, you can say, gives birth. So it's a combination between Mahavishnu and Shambhu and Parvati. So where that yoni is pointed, which is usually in a northern direction, it's usually pointed north, as is the case with Gopeshwar. Yoni is also pointed north, and there's a new Shiva temple that opened here. The yoni is also pointed, the opening to the yoni is pointed north. So with that, so when one wants to follow the proper etiquette, he'll come into the temple, if he's aware of directions, he'll see where the yoni is pointing, and he won't cross over that. Where the yoni is pointing means the yoni is pointing north, so that it's distributing all this Shiva prasadam of Charanamrita and all these different things, and it's considered to be a fence to cross over that. It's a great aparad in the worship of Shiva and Parvati. So one will go from the one side of the yoni to the other. It's Ardha Parikrama. You understand? And everyone will do that in every Shiva temple. Millions and thousands of people. Although, so I don't have quite the courage to do full time around, but I have heard that some acharyas do like that because of their realization and they're not on the platform of fear anymore. Because when there's some fear there, that means you're attached to vidhi. Vidhi means there's some fear. Oh, if I cross the yoni, Lord Shiva maybe crack me in the head or throw his trishan at me or something. But one who's in rag and, you know, and understands everything, then he can clearly act in a very transcendental way. But for those who don't have that realization, imitation is a cause of downfall. It's called anukaran. There's anusharan and anukaran. We cannot imitate those that are at a higher level than we are. Those that are at a higher adhikar, we can follow in their footsteps and try to understand, but we should be careful to imitate. One man's food is another man's poison. Some great yogis in the Himalayas, thousands and millions of years ago, they could drink mercury. They would drink mercury, and then they would urinate on copper coins. They would process the liquid mercury in their body, then they would urinate on copper coins, and a combination of mercury and copper produces gold. And that's the whole idea of alchemy in the Middle Ages. They would take copper coins and they would melt them, and they would have liquid copper. Then they would take mercury, which is also a liquid. It's a liquid and a gas. It's like semi-solid. It's a liquid and a gas. And they would add the mercury to the copper, because they know if you combine the two, you'll get gold. Gold. Because it's a chemical combination. But as soon as the mercury hit the boiling, the boiling copper, then mercury evaporated. You understand? Evaporated goes into the clouds. And you get no gold coins. You understand? So, Prabhupada explained on one tape that the yogis, and mercury, of course, if you drink mercury, what happens? Haribo! No more pendulums. You go back to Godhead, or you go to Doghead, or wherever you're destined. So the yogis are so powerful they could digest this. So one man's food is another man's poison. They could eat it and then do this and make gold coins. And so, Lord Shiva, we cannot imitate the behavior of great souls who act in a certain way. Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra. We cannot understand their mudras, their movements. Mudras means movements or posture or position. Their kriya, their activities, we should not try to understand, just try to follow their teachings. These different forms of Lord Shiva have manifested here in Vrindavan to take part in Krishna's lila and also to bless us. So as I mentioned, there are thousands and thousands of Shiva lingas all over Vrindavan, known and unknown, manifest and unmanifested. And some of these deities are, of course, they were installed by Bajranav, Krishna's great-grandson, 5,000 years ago, to commemorate the particular lila that Lord Shiva took part in with the Lord, and also to bless us and with his mercy. So the first one we can consider is the Nandishvara himself, Nandishvara Hill, where Krishna is in Govardhan. At the top of the hill there's a Nandishvara, there's a Shivalinga of Lord Shiva. It's called Nandishvara. He means the protector of Nandagram. He's the protector of Nandagram, Krishna's home. So there's one beautiful pastime related to another place near Lalitakund and Nandagram, Ashishvara Mahadev. But after Krishna was born and he came here to Nandagram, then Lord Shiva wanted to have his darshan. So Lord Shiva came to the palace, to the gate of the palace in Nandagram. And he was asking the guards, the chokidars, "Oh, I want to see Kaniya, I want to have this darshan and see this young boy, so beautiful boy." So they went in and they told Mother Yashoda, "There's some atiti, some mendicant, some yogi, some great yogi out there to see, wants to have darshan of your son." And so Mother Yashoda, she looked out and she said, "Oh, this man has this long hair, all matted locks and skulls around his neck and snakes around his neck and a big tree shoon, big pointed, spear, and a very powerful figure, and he's covered with ashes everywhere, and doesn't look too sweet for my son. I mean, this is like a horror movie or something, scare the child." So she said, "No, tell him that my baby's sleeping and maybe come back some other time." So then Lord Shiva was very unhappy, so he went away and he said, he was thinking, he made a vow that unless I have darshan of Nanda Nandana, Yashoda Nandan, I'll not leave this place. I've come here and I'll just go to the forest here and I'll do austerities. So he went nearby, started performing austerities. And then as soon as Mother Yashoda went back into Krishna's room, Krishna's crying. And she tried so many normal ways to make him stop crying, the rocking and the kissing and the hugging and all the things mothers do for time immemorial to make children stop crying. Give him his toys, here, play with this, and no, and throwing everything away and give him some food to eat. And I don't want food, I don't want toys, and then I don't want singing, I don't want hugging, I don't want kissing, I don't want sleeping. what did Krishna want? He wanted Shiva. He wanted Shiva darshan. So he's crying, crying, crying. Then she said, well, let's see. Maybe it's me. So she called in Ambika and Kalimba and some of the different nurses that lived there with her and assist her in her work. So Ambika came and Kalimba, and they tried, because they know some other little songs that Yashoda doesn't know, and they tried some other tricks. They know, hang him by his ankles and swing him like this and that. I just cried more and more. So then they tried to make funny faces, and you know, because they go a little out of their way, because you know, they're working for Mother Yashoda, so to speak. And then she called Rohini. Then Rohini, Balaram's mother, came, and so no one had any luck. Krishna's crying, 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 crying. So then, you know, Mother Yashoda was really disturbed because her boy was upset and unhappy and crying, and then she became unhappy and crying. And then Nanda Maharaj came and said, what is going on? Why is everyone crying? So, well, I don't know. Maybe somebody came to see him, and some yogi Raj, and I sent him away. And Nanda Maharaj ordered the servants, he ordered so many guards. He said, go look for that yogi Raj, bring him. So they found Lord Shiva, and they brought him. And they said, what do you want? He said, I just want to see this little boy and have a little bit of his remnants. If I can just have some food, some prasad from his mouth. So then they brought, as soon as they brought Lord Shiva into the living, you know, the can say living room or something, darshan room, then he saw the baby, and then Krishna stopped crying, and he was smiling. And he was so happy to see Mahadev, Lord Shiva. And then he said, what about I can have some remnants, you know, something is food. So then they gave him some remnants, and he took them, and he was so happy. So then, what happened is, after this pastime, then of course, you know, Krishna went back to the spiritual world. But there was a Shiva Linga installed there, right next to Krishna's house, and a little temple was made, a little house was made for Lord Shiva, and he manifested there in the Linga form, Nandishwar. And then what they do is, because Lord Shiva came there with a desire to have darshan of Krishna and receive his remnants, and every day when the pujaris, they offer bhoga to Krishna and Balaram, after they offer to Krishna and Balaram, they take it and offer to Lord Shiva. Just, this is nitya lila. This is eternal pastime, because they know that Lord Shiva wants to eat the remnants of Krishna and Balaram. And of course, this is the proper way to worship demigods. Although Lord Shiva is also a god in one sense. But he's acting in the role of a demigod also, in one of his forms. And Jagannath Puri, in the temple of Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, that is how they relate to the demigods there. They worship Krishna and Balaram first, then they take the remnants of Krishna and Balaram and they offer it to different devis and devas. But they have different temples around the main temple. So this is Nandishwar Mahadev. He's there on top of Govardhan Hill. And it explains in Bhakti Ratnakar and other places that someone goes to Nandagram, they take bath in Pavan Sarovar, and then take darshan and Nandishwar, because he's the protector, he's the controller, he's protecting the holy dham for Krishna and Balaram. And if someone goes there and takes darshan and Nandishwar, then Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Baba and Yashoda, and then he'll get the blessings of the Lord, he'll become successful in his endeavor. That's one thing. I don't know what that means exactly. One thing is this. Bhakti Ratnakar says he'll be successful in business. Of course, our only business is to attain great wealth. That is the business of all devotees. We want to attain great wealth, isn't it? So we have to understand from the viewpoint of Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Shiksha, what is the definition of wealth? And that question was asked by Lord Chaitanya to Ramananda Roy. What is wealth? Who is really a wealthy person? Who is a rich person? Who is a Kurapati? And then Ramananda Roy, inspired by Lord Chaitanya, he gave the answer that, my Lord, a wealthy person is someone who has pure love for Radha and Krishna. One who has pure love for Radha and Krishna, he's really wealthy. So as we mentioned, by the blessings of Nandishwar Shiva, Mahadev, in Nandagram, and Krishna Balaram, in the Dham, one can become successful in their business. So our business is to become wealthy. All of us want to become wealthy and successful. So success and wealth is measured by attachment to Krishna and how much prema we have. Or at least now maybe our bank account is a little empty. But we hope that we'll get some transfer of funds. Some funds will be transferred into our account. isn't it? So that is the whole idea of dissension of mercy. So Nandishvar and Gopishvar and Bhuteshvar and Kameshvar and Chakaleshvar, they're all merciful manifestations of the Lord that have come here to give mercy. And that's why great devotees throughout the last, you know, millennium after millennium have been worshipping these different forms of Lord Shiva for mercy, to get the wealth of Krishna and the wealth of Radha, Radha and Krishna Prema. And, of course, so Nandishvar is there for those devotees who want to serve in Nandagaon and live in Nandagram and serve the Lord. Nandishvar is, he grants entrance into that petal of the lotus of Braj. I mentioned that there are five main Shiva deities in Braj Mandal. So this Nandishvar Mahadev, he's protecting the northern side. He's protecting Nandagram, the northern side. Then in the southern side of Braj Mandal and Mathura side, then you have Bhuteshwar. Bhuteshwar, the Lord of the Bhuts, Bhutas, the Lord of the underworld, the nether regions. In other words, we see with our eyes so many species of life, 8,400,000 species of life have been categorized, Jalajal Navalakshani, 9 lakhs of species that take birth in the water, Jalajal Navalakshani. Navalakshani means 9 lakhs of Jalaja, they're born in the water, 2 million plants, and 3 million beasts, and 400,000, 4 lakhs varieties of human beings, civilized and uncivilized, sophisticated and unsophisticated, higher and lower. Gandharvas and Kinnaras are one type of human being, and they live on higher planets. And like what we say, angels, you know, in the Bible they have angels with wings, and they're called Kinnaras. They're human form with wings, fly around. And there's Gandharvas, and like that. 4 lakhs. So Bhuteshwar, but we see all that with our eyes, but Bhuteshwar, there's just as millions and millions of unembodied living entities, the subtle beings that are moving around, influencing people and places and things. And Lord Shiva is their Lord. So he's protecting the Mathura section of Braj Mandal in the south, Nandishvar in the north. On the east side, protecting the east side of Braj Mandal, specifically the forest of Vrindavan, there is probably one of the most famous Lord Shivas known as Gopeshwar. Then in the western side of Braj Mandal, protecting anyone coming from Rajasthan, anyone coming in on camels or elephants, there's Kameshwar and Kamvan. Then who's protecting the middle region, in the middle, if someone wants to drop in on the middle side? Chakaleshwar. At Manasiganga, there's Chakaleshwar. So these are the five principal Shiva deities, and they're all very merciful. And they're all approached by devotees for mercy. So, we can discuss, first of all, we can discuss the Mathura Ishvara, Bhuteshwar. And I have some different quotes I'd like to read, because I don't really have all these things in my memory. Some things, not many things. But there's a nice glorification of Bhuteshwar and Mathura Mahatmyam by Rupa Goswami. So I could read that. Because although I remember one year, we were fortunate enough to go around to see all the Shiva deities. So I thought that we can go, because we're followers of Rupa and Raghunath, Rupa Raghunatha Pari Hoi Vyakuti. So one thing, Raghunath Das Goswami, he's our teacher of how to do proper bhajan and develop the humility to attract the merciful glance of Prema Mayi, Srimati Radharani. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he shows us that every day we have such a tremendous ego, and we have such a powerful ego, and we think we're so special, and we think we're so intelligent, or gifted, beautiful, or whatever. Or we just think we're the body, regardless of with any gifts at all. We just intensely identify that I'm the body, and I need to eat a lot, and sleep a lot, and get glorified a lot, and you know, whatever. So this is all false ego. And so one way to conquer false ego is by serving Vaishnavas and by developing humility, because humility is the opposite of pride. Humility is a saintly quality and pride is a demoniac quality. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he taught by his own personal example that one great way to develop humility is to offer obeisances and respects to all the Vaishnavas. So he would remember all the different Vaishnavas that he associated with at Panihati and Jagannath Puri, and also, of course, in Vrindavan. And he would invoke their remembrance in his mind. He would think of them and think of their mercy. And then he would offer obeisances to 2,000 Vaishnavas a day, every day. And then he would offer obeisances to 1,000 obeisances to the Lord, and thinking of it, the Lord's different Leela Stalis, and Gaur Leela, and Mayapur, and Nityananda's Leela, and Panihati, and Ekachakra, and Jagannath Puri, and Vrindavan. So you think of the Lord, and Gaur Leela, and Radha Krishna Leela, just pay his obeisances. So invoking that, or following that kind of example of Raghunath Das Goswami, I thought we could hear about these different Shiva deities, and then we can offer obeisances in our mind. We can go there and we can do, you know, Ardha Parikrama or Full Parikrama, whatever your Adhikar is. Whatever your Adhikar is, you can do. And then you can pray. So because we're not limited by our bodies. If our bodies are the only vehicle by which we can attain perfection, then we won't go very far. Because our bodies in Kali Yuga are extremely lazy. We can't sit up without, you know, we have to lean against a wall. We have to use our minds. In fact, that's really what has to get turned on, is using our minds. So we can go and see Lord Bhuteshwar by hearing about him, because we see by hearing. We don't really see with our eyes anyway. How can we see anything spiritual, transcendental? We need spiritual vision. So that comes by Shravanam. So glorification of the deity of Lord Bhuteshwar by Rupa Goswami. Oh, Bhuteshwar Shiva, you are the protector of Mathura. Oh, Mahadev, a person who sees you will attain the result of seeing my own abode. This is from the Adi Purana. Krishna himself is speaking this. So anyone who sees Bhuteshwar, now it says, in Mathura is a deity of Lord Bhuteshwar who grants liberation even to the sinful. This deity of Bhuteshwar is very dear to me. This is Krishna speaking. How can a sinful person who tries to worship me, but who will not worship Bhuteshwar Shiva, attain devotion to me? The lowest of men who are bewildered by my maya will not meditate on, bow down before, and offer prayers to Lord Bhuteshwar. So, we can meditate on Bhuteshwar, and we can bow down before him and offer prayers to him. That we can pray to him that he'll grant liberation to us and bless us with the mercy, so we can chant Namabhas, chant without offenses. That's one form of liberation. And we can pray because he's very merciful. And we can pray that he'll help us attain devotion to him, to Lord Krishna. There's some other thing here. Mathura Mandala Prakram Bhakti Ratnakar, of course, it mentions Bhuteshwar also. In Mathura lives the supremely merciful deity of Bhuteshwar. The darshan of Kshetrapal Mahadev will assist one in reaching the abode of Krishna. So he's a Kshetrapal. Kshetra means the place. It's the place of Krishna's pastimes. He's protecting the holy dham of Mathura. And by his darshan, we will be helped. In Adivaraha Purana, it states, Lord Bhuteshwar, who grants liberation even to the sinful, resides in Mathura. He's very dear to me. This is the same verse just quoted here. If anyone does not care for the worship of Shiva, my topmost devotee, how can that sinner attain devotion to me? Only those who are lowest of men and whose intelligence is bewildered will not offer obeisances and remember Lord Shiva. Actually, these different deities of Lord Shiva are very, very ancient, because there's four deities in Mathura. There's Bhuteshwar, Pipaleshwar, Rangeshwar, and Gokarneshwar, these four deities. And Kamsa used to worship different deities, like Rangeshwar he worshipped. Before he had his Dhanarajyagya, he worshipped Rangeshwar. Rangeshwar, I believe, is right near Keshwaji Gaudiyamath. He worshipped Lord Shiva to pray for fulfillment of his desire to defeat Krishna and Balaram, but he had a little opposite response, because Rangeshwar is Lord Shiva, and he's a great devotee of Krishna and Balaram, So he's not going to defeat them. Rather, the opposite thing happened, and Kamsa was finished off. So Bhuteshwar was also worshipped by Kamsa. Now we can discuss... I was thinking we'll save... Now we'll go to... that was Bhuteshwar. We also discussed Nandeshwar. Right? Nandagram. This mountain you see is called Nandeshwar, the place of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva prayed very fervently to Krishna, begging him to be allowed to see his transcendental pastimes. And to do this, he performed tapasya for many centuries. And Krishna asked him what he wanted. He said, let me become a mountain in Vrindavan, so then the gopis stepping on me would leave me the dust from their lotus feet. That is all I ask for. Just let me be a stone on the road, so that those blessed souls who are sweepers of the holy Dham and who are constantly in contact with the dust of Vrindavan would rub their feet upon me. That's all I want. Krishna was very pleased to hear this and granted Shiva the boon. And he became Nandeshwara Mountain. Nandagram was built upon him. Let us pray to Lord Shiva that he blesses us also to always have humble desires like him that will please the Supreme Lord Krishna. So again, that's the kind of the theme of humility. He wasn't asking the Lord to, I want to be a coward boy or a gopi. He said, I want to be a stone. Just let me be a stone and see, I can witness your transcendental pastimes as being a stone. Uddhava Mahashaya prayed to be a goma lata, a tiny plant or creeper, not even on the main road, just on the side path that the gopis might step on him. And then Brahma prayed also, Lord Brahma, he prayed to be a little pebble or a piece of stone in Vrindavan. So how much humility that they have to have that feeling that any kind of position in Vrindavan would be a great fortune. And here we are in our forms here, we're moving, walking in Vrindavan, and what are we desiring? What are we thinking of? The greatest demigods, Shiva, Brahma, the greatest devotees like Uddhava, they just say, let me just be a stone in Vrindavan, let me be a creeper, a little weed on the piece of grass on the ground. So Lord Chaitanya, of course, he explains that this is the key to prema, this principle of humility. And Lord Shiva is also showing us this principle. He himself takes a very humble position. But then he is also very attracted to Krishna's pastimes, and Krishna is his friend. As I was mentioning earlier, Krishna never chastises Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva gives benedictions to demons like Brahma does, and Brahma gets in trouble and Krishna's unhappy with him and even speaks, tells him, don't do like this, don't give these benedictions to demons. But when Lord Shiva gives benedictions to demons and make a big mess of things, then Krishna doesn't say anything. Just like Lord Shiva gave a benediction to Ravana, right? And Ravana became very powerful, but Ram never chastised Lord Shiva. In fact, he worshipped Lord Shiva in South India. And that place where he worshipped Lord Shiva became known as Rameshwaram, the Lord of Ram, because the Saranam Ridiyam Mayam, that the devotee is always in the heart of the Lord, and the Lord is always in the heart of the devotees. So in one sense, the devotee is the Lord of the Lord, and the Lord is the Lord of the devotees. Which means for the pure devotees, for the loving devotees, they can control Krishna by the purity of their prema. The devotees can become the Lord or Master of the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Krishna. And obviously Krishna is also the Master of the devotees. So Ramachandra and Treta Yuga, he wanted to finish off and kill Ravana and rescue his kidnapped wife Sita. But he respected so much his devotee, and he cared so much for his devotee, Lord Shiva, that he prayed, he worshipped him. He offered flowers, because the devotee worships Krishna, but Krishna worships his devotee. Krishna, the greatest devotee of Krishna is Srimati Radharani, and she worships Krishna. But Krishna also worships her. Krishna worships Radharani. He offers artik to her. He dresses her. He offers her foodstuffs. He offers her mala. He takes her feet and he holds her feet on his head. Just like a pujari, before serving the Lord or after serving the Lord, what does a pujari do? He submits himself. He says, oh my Lord, dasasmi, I'm your servant. And he puts his head at the feet of the Lord and as a speck of dust. Ayinanda Tanujakin Kuram Patitamba Mishavim Bhavam Buddha Kripya Tava Parapankaja Stita Duli Sadvijam Vijantaya. He says that I offer myself as a speck of dust at your feet. Please don't kick me away. Please keep me there and shelter me there and bless me with the sweet perfume of your feet and the sweet dust of your feet, which will satisfy me in all ways. So the Pujari, he offers his head there, and he says, I am your servant. And then he renders service. And then when he's finished, he offers his head again. So Krishna, he takes Radharani's, he puts his head at Radharani's feet. So obviously, Radharani is the Lord of Krishna. He is worshipping her. And when he finishes his puja, or even to begin his puja, he has to take her feet and put on his head. So in this way, Lord Ramachandra, he worshipped his devotee with flowers and so many things. So it's not. So some people misconstrue this. They say, oh, Lord Shiva, he's the controller of Ram. Rameshwaram. Rameshwaram means Ishwara. Ishwara means controller. See? This proves that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord of all lords is Shiva. Even Ram had to worship him. They don't understand the tattva. They don't understand actually the reality. So that took place there in South India, Rameshwaram, where the Lord worshipped. But so that shows that the Lord is not angry. He never gets angry with Shiva. In Krishna Leela, Shiva gave benediction to so many demons that caused so much trouble. But Krishna never got angry. Never got angry with Shiva. He likes him so much. He's very, very dear to Lord Shiva. That's why Vaishnavanam, Yatashambhu, the greatest of all the Vaishnavas is Lord Shiva. And we as devotees, we want to become dear to Lord Krishna. We want to worship Lord Krishna and love Lord Krishna. And so therefore we go to his devotees and say, please, can you be merciful to me? Can you give your mercy to me? Can you bless me? So Lord Shiva, we especially want to approach Lord Shiva and pray to him in his very varied forms. Because he already has his label. Oh, he's a pushover. He's easy. Like if somebody is really, really wealthy and someone says, you know, this person is giving out money like anything. He'll give money to anybody. So, well, where does he live? So everybody lines up and they go there. Hey, can I have some money? Well, what for? Oh, my baby's hungry. Okay, take some money. Can I have some money? Oh, I'm hungry. Oh, yeah, take some money. You know, any purpose, he just gives the money freely. When Ambarish Ford, or whatever his name was, Alfred Ford, who became initiated as Ambarish, when he was first came to ISKCON, everybody found out that this millionaire had become Prabhupada's disciple. Because I interviewed him for Leelamrita. So all these devotees were writing him. He used to get 200, 300, you know, letters every day because there was no email in those days. So he was living in Arizona in a house in the mountains. And this is just when he was still Alfred Ford, and they heard about it. And he was interested in Krishna consciousness. So all these devotees were writing letters. Oh, I need a new baby carriage. I want to start a business. I need this, that. I need a bicycle. And can you send 100? So he would just write on his checks. He would just write a check. He was in the mood of like, well, I should serve the devotees. And I should just, whoever, you know, ask me, I should just give them. So he was just writing checks, 5,000, 10,000, 1,000, 500, 200, 300. Just writing checks and sending them out. And then someone told Prabhupada, he said, you know, Ambarish is like giving money to everybody and never saw them. You don't know if it's really, person's even a devotee or what. You know, anybody just writes Krishna Das, post office box 5. So Prabhupada told him, he said, no, better you, you know, slow down on that donations and just, you know, you'll give to me or BBT or whatever. So Lord Shiva, he is like that. He's very easily pleased. In fact, there's a beautiful story that is in Shiva Purana about there's this one famous Shiva temple, and there, the Shiva Linga there was a Shiva Linga, and on all four sides of the Shiva Linga were these like what do you call cobras, golden cobras, and like this, and like serving him. Then above the Shiva Linga was a big kalash, a big pot, kumbha, golden pot, and that was dripping water on Lord Shiva to keep him cool because, you know, he likes to stay cool. So this one thief, he thought, oh, that golden pot, if I could steal that pot, that would be so good. I could get so much money. So he came there and late at night, and he broke into that Shiva temple. And then he went in there, and then he was saying, oh, how can I reach that? He was reaching up to get the golden pot. You know the story. And he couldn't reach the pot. I told it before, you know. And he couldn't reach the pot, and he was thinking, oh, I can't, it's out of my reach, it's too high. And he said, well, I'll just step on the Shiva Linga here. So he had his shoes outside, you know, he left his shoes outside, he was a pious Hindu. Didn't bring, pious criminal. So he was barefoot, and he stood on the Shiva Linga, then he reached, and he was holding, he had the pot, but somehow it was on some chain or something, hooked on a beam, and he was like pulling it. You know, standing on Lord Shiva like this, like kind of rubbing his feet back and forth, like a kind of massage with his feet, rubbing his feet like this. And then all of a sudden he slipped and he fell off. And he fell on top of one of the cobras and broke them off and everything on the side. And then when he did that, and Lord Shiva came out of the Shiva Linga, he was stretching and goes, ah, oh no, no, oh Shiva, oh no, Shivaya, Shivaya, Shivaya. Please don't kill me. Don't kill me. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. I don't need, and Lord Shiva was, he's known as Bolinath? Bolinath. Bolinath means like innocent. So this is the pastime behind how he got this name. So then Lord Shiva said, no, relax. Stop crying. Stop, you know, everything's okay. I'm not angry. Don't worry. You know, I won't kill you, I won't harm you. You have to understand, some people come here every day and they give me so much, you know, puja and artik and prayers and stutis, and they ask for so many things, and they always treat me so reverentially, and they, you know, they put their head on me, or they circumambulate me. But no one ever shows me very much affection. And they're like, but you were standing on me with your feet, and you were like rubbing me like with your feet, and just so intimate, no formalities, no rules and regulations, just like a friend, just like one coward boy on top of another coward boy, or one boy gets on another's shoulder. So I really relished it, I really enjoyed it. So don't worry, you go from here, and everything will be all right. You don't have to steal anymore. Just you go and be happy. I'll arrange everything. So he got the name Bolinath, the Lord of the Innocent, or Bolare Baba means. He's a very, very innocent and very simple person. You know, he's under the bilva tree. We offer the bale putra, bilva putra, the bale leaves, because that's his. He likes it. Just like, why do we offer? Someone said, well, why do we offer bilva putra? Well, he likes it. He likes bale leaves, and of course, there may be some long Puranic story about it. But just like, why do we offer Krishna Tulsi? Well, he likes Tulsi. And then why do we chant on Tulsi beads? Because that's what Vaishnavas chant on, Tulsi beads. Or why, and Shaivites chant on Rudraksha. So they're different, it's personal. It's like we have our likes and dislikes, so the Supreme Lord and the Devas have their likes and dislikes. Once time, Mother Parvati, she was under the tree, the Bale tree, living there with Lord Shiva. And she was, you know, this is a story Prabhupada tells, which I've told before, but somehow stories are coming. The stories are there. So Parvati said, you know, Sachi and Arundhati and all the other demigoddesses, they all have fabulous palaces, huge, opulent palaces. And you know, we're just under this tree, you know, under this bale tree, and, you know, you have no clothes, and, you know, people could sometimes like, criticize, and say, don't you have any, you know, you don't have anything, and you're Durga, you know, I'm supposed to be controlling the whole everything. And, and, you know, because of your austerities and tapasya, I'm just following you. You're my husband, I follow you. And we have nothing, you know, and our son there, you know, is just eating laddus all day. And Kartikeya is there sharpening his arrows. And we don't have any palace or anything. Or just, what is this? You know? Lord Shiva says, okay. All right, enough. You know, husbands and wives sometimes they get, you know, a little bit too much. So he says, I'll make a big palace. So he made a huge palace, of hundreds of rooms, and, you know, golden walls and diamond doors and all kinds of opulence. So he had the Griha Pravesh, the opening ceremony. He invited all the different demigods, Indra, Chandra, Surya, everybody came. Brahma invited them all, a huge bandara, a huge feast for everybody, chapan bhog, everything. Rasmalai, kachuris, puri, sabji, halva. All nice preparations, nice things. And then, so everyone's eating, and there's music, and there's dancing, and there's, you know, movies, entertainment, everything. And it was, everyone's so happy and joyous. So then everyone's about to leave. Says, I don't have any rupees from the bank. I don't have any money, I can't give. Anyway, I tell you what. You just take this palace. Just everyone take the palace and liquidate it and divide it up, figure it out. So then he told Parvati, he says, look, all I have is this palace, so I donate this to all the demigods, and they're going to figure, you know, divide it up and auction it off or whatever. And we have to go back to the Baal tree. Shankara Bhagavan ki Bam Bam Bale Mahadev ki Jai. Goshwar Mahadev ki Jai, Budeshwar Mahadev ki Jai. Okay. So they went back to the Bilva tree. So he likes these Bilva leaves, and he's easily pleased. Just as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Tayam Yome Bhakti Prayachati Taram Bhakti Paritam Ashami Prayatapana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna says, I'm very happy if you offer me a leaf, patram, a pushpa, a flower, or a phalam, a fruit, or toyam, some water. If you offer me with bhakti, it must be bhakti. If you offer me without bhakti, I don't need your fruits and foods and water. I don't need anything. I'm aptakam and atmaram. I'm self-satisfied. I have no desires to be fulfilled and from any side. What do I need your offering for? But I am rasaraj and rasamayi, rasuvaisa. I am made of ras and bhakti ras and prem ras, and I'm thirsty to drink that. I want to taste the love of your heart and receive the sweetness of your emotions and your feelings. So if you offer me with love and devotion just a tulsi leaf, then I'll be very, very happy. So Shiva, in the same way, the Lord and the devotees have similar ideas and mentalities. So Lord Shiva is very happy if we offer him just a simple three leaves from the Baal tree, isn't it? A little water, the same thing. We offer Shiva a little Ganga water, same as Krishna, some water. Datura fruit. Datura fruit. Krishna, he says fruit, so that means some kind of fruit that, you know, some fruit, which nowadays you have to buy those kind of fruits. There's not too many free fruit trees around. You try to get a free fruit, you get a shot in the pants. You know, somebody will shoot you. But Shiva's, he's more merciful. The devotee is more merciful than the Lord. And in fact, the mercy incarnation of the Lord is in the form of the devotee. So Lord Shiva, he says, I also... except a leaf or a fruit. But Bilva leaves, the fruit you can offer me is datura. Datura is what we call in modern language a weed. Datura is everywhere growing, all over the place. No one guards it. No one guards it. No one fences it around. No one, you know, will catch you and punish you if you steal a datura of fruits or flowers from the datura plant. They'll just think, oh, he's some Shiva Bhakti, you know. So like that, Lord Shiva is very easy to please. So, now, let's see, Bhuteshwar, Nandeshwar, Kameshwar. Kameshwar, he's protecting Braj from the west side. And that's the story about Lord Shiva. You know the story, that after Parvati gave up her body in the Daksha Yajna, then Lord Shiva, he became rather, you can say, he was unhappy to lose his wife. So he went to the Himalayas, to Kailash, and he was doing intense austerities. Meanwhile, the demigods got themselves embroiled in another war with the demons. And they were losing horribly. So they thought, what to do? Well, if we can get Lord Shiva united again with his wife, because Sati, his wife, his name was Sati, or Durga, after she gave up her body in the Daksha Yajna, because Lord Shiva was insulted by her father, Daksha, then she took birth as a daughter of the Himalayan mountains. So her name was Parvati. Parvat means mountain. So, you know, very bold and strong and outspoken type, you know, Parvati. So it's like mountains are like kind of like they stick out, right? You know, mountains stick out in the crowd. So Prabhupada gave very appropriate names for all of his disciples. The demigods, they said, well, we have to. Lord Shiva is so powerful. If we can get a son from Lord Shiva, then we can defeat the demons. So then they had, of course, Lord Shiva's by himself. So then Parvati was taken from him. the Himalayan king, and she was taken to meet again her lost husband, you could say, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was locked in meditation, and there's no way that, and even his wife came to worship him, and he was naked, so she came and she worshipped his genital with flowers, just like we do Shiva Linga, we do puja, this is the genital of Lord Shiva. She offered flowers and a puja, and this Lord Shiva is considered the ideal example of dhira, of a sober person, undisturbed person. I mean, most material people, if you just touch someone's nose or something, they get agitated. In Kali Yuga, if a man touches a woman's nose or a woman touches a man's nose, he gets completely disturbed. Isn't it? You know, just to see each other, you know, what to speak of, you don't touch. But Lord Shiva, he's there, he's just meditating. Who's he meditating on? Sankarshan, Lord Ram. So this shows the power of higher taste, pram drisva nivartate. Vishaya vnivartante niharasya dehana rasa varjam rasopyasya pram drisva nivartate. It's a matter of ras. If one is relishing the internal ras of bhakti, then the jada ras, or the taste of this material world, will have no attraction. Even to such an extent as that, Lord Shiva was locked in his bhakti samadhi on the lotus feet of Ishtadev, Sankarshan. So even when his wife, Parvati, came and worshipped his genitals and touched them, he was not disturbed. So what had happened at that time, because when lusty exchanges are gone between man and woman, it says that the personification of lust is Kandarpa. Kandarpa or Panchasharai. Panchasharai means five arrows. Lord Kandarpa, or what we say Cupid, the god of love, has five arrows, or god of lust. So he shoots these five arrows into the heart of the man and woman. So Lord Shiva's in meditation, so as soon as Parvati was worshipping him like that, then this personification of lust, he shot his arrows, boom, into the heart of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, he was meditating, and his meditation was disturbed somewhat, a little bit. He felt his meditation broke, and he felt it. What is this? This Kandarpa? And he saw Kandarpa, and he glanced at him with his Trinetra, with his third eye, because he was enlightened. So with his third eye, he glanced at Kandarpa, at Cupid. What happened to Cupid? He became Ananga. Ananga means Ananga. Anga means arm, leg, body. And Ananga means without. So he lost his body. Then he prayed to Lord Shiva, and, well, please, you know, that's not a good idea, because I have a lot of work to do here in this material world, and I can't shoot my arrows if I don't have an arm and a hand and a, you know, body. So, and he said, okay, look, you can still act, but without a body. You can act on people. You can make people get lusty and, you know, and keep the material world going, because it goes on by lust. But you won't have a body. You won't have no physical body. So he's called Ananga. It's one of his names, Kandarpa, Panchasharai, Ananga. Different names for Lord Shiva, the god of lust. So, Lord Shiva, he got the name Kameshwara, Kamadev. Oh, that's another name for Lord Cupid. Cupid is Kamadev, the Lord of lust. So he's Kameshwara. He's the controller, the subduer of lust. So he got that name. Sometimes it's said that pastime took place in that forest. He was meditating in that forest of Kamyavan. At any rate, there is a linga there, a Shiva linga there, Kameshwara. And that's a very famous linga, and the devotees go there and they pray to Lord Shiva, please, Kameshwara. So now we should envision, okay, now we're in Kamyavan. We've gone to Kamyavan. It's a long journey. We've gone there and we're taking darshan of Kameshwara, and we're seeing this Shiva linga. It was installed 5,000 years ago by Bhadranath, but the pastime is eternal. Leela of Lord Shiva. And we have also a problem with lust, isn't it? Lust is our old friend, our old enemy, let's say. More like it's a friendly enemy. It's always a friend because it's always with us. But it's an enemy because it causes so much trouble in the mind and heart, so much burning sensation. So we're now at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva in his form, merciful form, Kameshwara. So we can do our prakrama and offer some flowers and some puja. And we can pray to Kameshwara, oh Kameshwara, please help us control our lust and engage our passionate energy in the loving service of Guru and Gauranga and Radha and Krishna. And may we once and for all get free from the victimization of this great enemy of devotion known as lust. Kama Esha Krodha Esha Raja Guna Samud Bhavaha. Kama and Krodha means lust and anger. They're born by the contact with mode of passion. So when one is, you know, living in a mode of ignorance and passion, then they're subjected to the influence of lust and greed. Kama Esha Krodha Esha Raja Guna Samud Bhavaha. Krodha means anger. Anger means unfulfilled lust. So anger, lust, when it's not fulfilled, it transmutates or it changes into anger. And anger causes inability to focus. When there's anger in the mind, although it's not, anger doesn't just mean you smash the wall or something with your hand. When anger is residing in the mind, it does not allow the mind to peacefully rest on the lotus feet of the holy name. And when anger is residing in the mind, it does not allow the mind to study Shastra or hear Harikatha, because the mind is disturbed by this presence of this enemy known as anger. So anger is a very subtle contamination, and it's due to lust. When we allow ourselves to be victimized by lust, an intense attachment or attraction to objects of the material world, and then we don't obtain those objects or fulfill our desires, then it creates a reaction of anger. So Kameshwar Mahadev, he is also very powerful and very kind to the devotees, so we can pray to him to please, this lust is keeping me from Krishna, life after life. Because generally when we hear descriptions of Lord Shiva, we hear, which we've spoken about so many other years, so we're trying to give some little different angle this year, that he is the worshipper of Sankarshan, and Sankarshan controls the false ego. It's like we listened to the class you gave us that little bit. It's such a nice class, but all of a sudden it was like, Aniyor. I mean, the kirtan was really good. I mean, the kirtan satisfied. Otherwise, I thought I was going to be devastated and then the kirtan came on, automatic reverse, and then I felt some relief by the kirtan. So that was some of the points that Maharaj was making on that tape about he's the lord of false ego, and we have a big problem with false ego. So that's all understood. But we can see that these particular forms of the Lord, they're showing us different principles, these forms of Lord Shiva. We discussed Nandishwar is showing that the whole way that Lord Shiva took the form of Nandishwar shows us the principle of humility. We discussed that, how we should be very humble and desire any kind of service position in the holy Dham. Then Kameshwar Mahadev, he shows that this is the real thing. Because false ego, what false ego means is I'm the enjoyer. False ego means I'm the body, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, I'm the master. And real ego, or pure ego, which is the result of perfected sadhana, is that dasasmi, I'm Krishna's servant. Krishna jivera surupaya, I'm Krishna's eternal servant. So Lord Shiva, he understands that principle perfectly, and he embodies that. He embodies the principle of service, and he's rendering so many different services as a protector of the holy Dham, as the remover of lust. So for thousands and thousands of years, Gaudiya Vaishnavas and Bhaktas have been going to these different forms of Shiva and praying for their benedictions and for their different mercies. So now, Chakaleshwar Mahadev, he's in Manasi Ganga. And Sanatan Goswami Pad, he had a very intimate relationship with Lord Shiva. So he's showing us, who is Sanatan Goswami? He's a Sambandacharya. He's teaching us how to develop a strong foundation in Krishna consciousness. How to develop a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. A relationship is basically service. Service expands into appreciation. Appreciation expands into attachment. And attachment fructifies in prema. So this sambandha, this relationship, is established by knowledge, by guru kripa, and by surrender, sharanagati. Surrender to guru, surrender to Srinam Prabhu, and surrender to the Shastras, accepting and believing, and having faith in the Vedic Shastras and teachings, and in the Holy Name, and in Guru, Yasyadeve Para Bhaktir Yadadeve Tathaguru. One who has faith, implicit and irrevocable faith, in the spiritual master, and in the Vedas, and all the secret teachings contained within the heart of Guru, and all the essence and the essential Siddhanta of the Shastras will be revealed in the heart of such a pure-minded and faithful disciple. So, Chakaleshwar, he is the Aditi of Lord Shiva residing there, and Sanatana Goswami, he would stay there, do his bhajan there, and worship Lord Shiva. So he's showing us, as a Sambandacharya, that Shiva worship is very important. It's very important at all stages of life, from Sambanda to Abhideya to Prayojana, to beginning to establish a relationship with Krishna, to cultivate our service relationship, and to attain the perfection of our service, which is Krishna Prema. As lastly, we'll hear about the gopis. So the gopis, of course, they're perfected, you know, they're eternal associates of the Lord, but they're showing us also the relationship of Lord Shiva to the Prayojana Tattva. Prayojana Tattva is the goal of life, which is pure love of Godhead. So they're showing that. So Sanatana Goswami would stay there and do bhajan and go around Govardhan Hill every day. And sometimes he was being disturbed over there by the mosquitoes at Manasi Ganga, because it's a watery area, lots of mosquitoes over there. So he was thinking, I'm going to leave this place. I'll go somewhere else and do my bhajan. I'll go to Pavan Sarovar, I'll go to Dvadasaditya Tila, to Vrindavan, I'll go somewhere else. So then Lord Shiva came there, and a Brahmin, he was disguised as a Brahmana. And he said, oh, Sanatan, oh, Baba, please don't go from here. I like very much your staying here and doing this puja. It's very nice that you're doing this puja to Lord Shiva, and you're doing your bhajan here, you're benefiting everyone here, and please don't go. Because don't worry, all the mosquitoes will go away from here. This will be a mosquito-free zone. You know, one of those signs with a mosquito with an X on it, you know. red, you know, sign, no mosquitoes. So he said, okay, fine. So he stayed there, and he did his bhajan there. And of course, in Vrindavan, when Sanatana Goswami lived at Dvadasaditya Tila, on top of the hill by the Yamuna, with Madan Mohan, every day he would take darshan of Gopishwar Mahadev, every single day, and do his puja there. So Sanatana Goswami, every day he would take darshan of Gopishwar and offer so many prayers and do puja there. Then he was becoming a little old. And so then Lord Shiva, he was on his way, because it's a little bit of distance, Dvadasaditya Tila to Gopishwar Mahadev. So he was walking slowly. It was all forested area. It wasn't like, you know, get a rickshaw or something like that. It was all forest and big trees, and Sanatana Goswami's walking. So one day Mahadev appeared to him, and he said, Sanatana Baba, again he appeared. He said, you don't have to go so far. Why you go so far? I'm here. I'm right here. You can just come here and do your puja here. So that form of Lord Shiva is known as Bankandi Mahadev. And so that deity is considered to be a self-manifest deity of Lord Shiva. Now the other deities we mentioned, Lord Shiva, the Shiva lingas that we worship, they were all installed 5,000 years ago by Bajranath. Kameshwar, Bhuteshwar, Pipaleshwar, Gopeshwar. So they're very, very old deities, and of course very, very powerful. They have all the power of Lord Shiva. But this particular Bankandi Mahadev, he appeared about 450 years ago to Sanatana Goswami. So it's called self-manifested. The linga just appeared out of the forest. At least that's how it's told. So he's a very merciful deity also, Bankandi. He's you could say, just like Giridhari, Giriraj is Krishna, Giridhari, but he's more merciful as Haridas Varya, because the devotee is more merciful than the Lord. So there's Gopishwar Mahadev, who's also merciful. Lord Shiva is so merciful because he's a devotee. But then he expands in a more merciful form as Bankandi Mahadev. So it's like, you know, it's a kind of an interesting tattva to think about, that he's already so merciful that the gopis used to go and worship Lord Shiva in Gopishwar form. But then 500 years ago, he wanted to extend more mercy, so he expanded the mercy. He's one form as Gopishwar, but then he becomes... So Bankandi Mahadev is, at least from my viewpoint of this pastime, is that he's a merciful expression of Gopishwar. Because Sanatana Goswami is going to take darshan of Gopishwar and worship Gopishwar for Braja Prem and showing us the example, because he's a Sambandacharya. So that means he's going to teach us the ABCs of spiritual life, and of course, you know, XYZs also. Everything Sanatana Goswami can reveal. Through the worship of Madan Mohan, we get free from attraction to Cupid, Madan, and we become overwhelmed and enchanted by the beautiful sweet flute and form and love and pastimes of Krishna in the form of Madan Mohan. And by worshipping Lord Shiva as Sanatana Goswami, we can become fixed in Brajnishta. We can live in Vrindavan in a humble way, and an appreciative way of all the Vaishnavas, and we can progress happily and quickly on the path of Prema Bhakti. So this is all what Sanatana Goswami is teaching us. So he's going to Gopeshwar to teach all these things to the sadhakas, and also for his own relationship, because Gopeshwar, where Gopeshwar is situated, that's the entrance to the Rasalila. So Sanatana Goswami as Labhanga Manjari has so much service in the Rasalila, in the Rasastali. So Brahmakund, Govindastali, the north of Govindastali, or Radha Govinda Mandir, is Brahmakund, and north of Brahmakund is the gate or the entranceway to Vamshivat or the Rasastali, Rasamandala, and that place north of Brahmakund is Gopeshwar, Mahadev's place, or Gopeshwar Tirtha. Then north of that is Vamshivat, and the Jamuna Pulin, and Deer Shamir, and Nirupan, and Sevakunj, and all the beautiful places arrayed on the banks of the Yamuna where Krishna enacts this wonderful Rasalila with all his gopikas. So Sanatana Goswami, he was going there to do it, and then all of a sudden Lord Shiva says, no, look, so this is, he's so merciful. So we can appreciate how Lord Shiva interacts with the devotee's desire. You want to worship him, and he approaches you, in other words, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards you, as Prabhupada used to say. You a little bit go towards Krishna, and he comes to you in such a big way. Even though we're not very sincere, we're not very surrendered, we're not very dedicated, whatever little bit of sincerity we can muster up, and whatever dedication we can pretend to show, and whatever surrender we can pretend to show, or pretend to feel, Krishna accepts that like anything, and just showers so much blessings and mercy and fortune upon us that we can never repay the great debt of his kindness. We're forever grateful to the Lord and his mercy. So Sanatana Goswami, that's Bankandi Mahadev, so we can often visit there and attain the mercy of Gopeshwar. If we don't have time, maybe we're just doing some other activities in Loy Bazaar, so we don't have time to go see Gopeshwar, so we can, as I say in England, pop in. We can pop in to see Bankandi Mahadev. Bankandi Mahadev ki! So now we've come to last but not least of the Shivalings, Gopeshwar Mahadev. And Gopeshwar Mahadev is so merciful and so kind to all the devotees. Prabhupada, interestingly enough, there are two different places in Prabhupada's books he talks about Gopeshwar Mahadev. In his purports, he said, in Vrindavan there's a temple of Lord Shiva, a famous temple of Lord Shiva known as Gopeshwar Mahadev, and devotees go there and worship. I think this one book here has something about this. Is a quote from the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 30, verse 38 purport. It was exactly what I was recalling to some extent. Prabhupada said, in Vrindavan the Gopeshwar Mahadev temple is dedicated to Lord Shiva's pastime of appearing as a gopi. Although Lord Shiva is represented here in the form of a linga deity, Gopeshwar Mahadev is particularly important because of his intimate relationship with Sri Krishna's Madhurya Ras. I mean, there's lots of things in Prabhupada's books, actually, but we just kind of read them. It's just like our eyes are like little, like a, you know, tennis ball or something, you know. Our eyes are just bouncing. This is like the pavement, you know, or the tennis court, and our eyes just pop, 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 and then we turn the page, pop, pop. Our eyes just bounce over the pages. We don't actually penetrate, absorb, realize, understand, and apply the esoteric teachings offered within the pages of Srila Prabhupada's books. Gopeshwar Mahadev is particularly important because of his intimate relationship with Sri Krishna's Madhurya Ras. Gopeshwar Mahadev is always guarding Govindaji's sacred yogapit. The gopis also worship Lord Shiva in Vrindavan, and the Lord is still staying there as Gopeshwar. The gopis, however, pray that Lord Shiva bless them by giving Lord Krishna as their husband. There is no harm in worshipping demigods, provided one's aim is to return home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada's further purport, Canto 4, Chapter 7, Verse 10. If anyone sees Lord Shiva with devotion and reverence, his heart is immediately cleansed. Pavitra Darshan, Vaishnava Pavitra Darshan, Narottam Das explains in one song, Ganga Parasa Hoile Snan. After repeated bathing in the Ganga, in the Ganges River, in the Ganga, bathing time and time again, one will become purified of their sins. But simply by a darshan, pavitra darshan, darshan of a Vaishnava, actually a purely situated Vaishnava, just by seeing that person once, we become purified of your sins. So of the two, the Ganges, the Ganga or the Vaishnava is glorified more than the Ganga. There's more power in the darshan of the devotee than there is in the bathing in the Ganga. What to speak of the Vaishnava and Yatashambhu, the darshan of Lord Shiva is bahut pavitra, very much purifying. A Vaishnava's visit to Shiva temple is different than a non-devotee's visit. A Vaishnava sees Lord Shiva as being simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, Supreme Lord, like yogurt and milk. For this reason, Mahaprabhu and his followers visited all the temples of the demigods, but they did not see them in the way that an impersonalist sees them. Everyone should follow the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and visit all temples. Chaitanya Madhyalila, chapter 9. Verse 360, purport. In the Adi Varaha Purana, how can those who don't respect my foremost devotee, Lord Shiva, ever become devoted to me? So, some nice things. Oh, this is nice from Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, verse 23. Lord Shiva is a celebrated, which means famous, demigod, who awards gifts to beggars. His name is therefore Ashutosh, or one who is pleased very easily. Lord Shiva never denies anyone any sort of gift. So, of course, Raghunath Das Goswami, he prayed that he wants prema. That's the gift we want. As we mentioned earlier, that's the wealth we want, the wealth of prema. So we should, hopefully, that's what we beg Gopishwar for, the wealth of prema. So in Braja Riti Chintamani, Vishnu Chakravarti Pad, he has a nice verse glorifying Gopishwar. Gopisha isha satarisha kone, gopi jananam varador chaniya, Sri Krishna sangaya yata saduti, jano vino dena vino dinoti. Very beautiful verse. Varada, it's like that plant is there. Kripa Kataksha. He bestows Gopi Jananam Varado Ishakone in the north. North of that, they're describing here different places. North of Brahmakund is Gopisha, where, worshipped by the gopis, Lord Shiva pleased the gopis' hearts by giving them the benediction to enjoy pastimes with Lord Krishna. Sri Krishna Sangaya Yata Saduti Jano Vino Dena Mano Dinoti. Sri Krishna Sangha. So the gopis, of course, they wanted, we'll read elsewhere, that they would go after Gopishwar appeared there, and which we'll hear, appeared in the Rath for Darshan Rasa dance. Then a linga was established there, and the gopis would worship that linga every day and pray to Gopishwar to remove all of the obstacles so they could have Sri Krishna Sangaya. Sangha, so they can meet with Sri Krishna without any obstacles. Duti Jana, messengers. So they wanted that benediction. That was a benediction they want, to enjoy pastimes with Krishna. So that's a nice benediction, to enjoy pastimes with Krishna, because now we're trying to enjoy pastimes without Krishna. and what is the result of those pastimes? There's some enjoyment, there's some suffering. Because this is the middle planet. This is in the middle. So in the middle planetary system, on the Earth planet, you have 50% happiness and 50% distress. At best, if you're a lucky guy. If you're really lucky. But most people, they have like 60-40, or some people are like 70-30. 70% unhappiness and 30% happiness. So like that. So we're trying to enjoy as best we can. The body, mind, senses. But the gopis, they didn't have that idea. They say we want to enjoy serving Krishna. That's also enjoyment, isn't it? Do you find pleasure serving Krishna? No? Then might as well pack up and go home. Because if there's no pleasure, Rasa Vaitsa, that we are pleasure seekers. You know, Ananda Maya Vyasat. The soul is made of Ananda. Ananda means happiness, satisfaction, pleasure. If there's no joy in chanting Krishna's name, if your heart doesn't melt and your hair doesn't stand on end, or spin around or do something, you know, then okay, then take prasadam. Then if your hair doesn't stand on end when you take prasadam, then, you know, that's for Krishna. Somehow, something has to stand on the end, either your hair or your head or something. So Krishna is very, very pleasurable. So this is just one nice verse, and then in Stavavali, Brajavilas Stav by Raghunath Das Goswami, he has also some nice verses. But before we say those verses, let's discuss a little bit about the pastime of how Lord Shiva became a gopi. How is it he became a gopi? Do we ever hear of Indra becoming a gopi? Quite the opposite. Indra's got a pretty embarrassing history there. Not exactly gopi bhav. And then Brahma? Brahma, no. But just see, you know, who becomes gopis? Very, very special personalities. Narada Muni became gopi. Because why? How do you got the Adhikar? Because he's always chanting Radhika Raman. So that, you know, he got the blessings of the Lord. And Yogamaya. And Lord Shiva became gopi. So that shows how intimate, how sweet the relationship is of Krishna and Lord Shiva. He allowed Shiva that privilege. So, I saw, sometimes it's told by people from Nimbark Sampradaya, who are quite prevalent in Vrindavan, they tell the story. The Lord Shiva desired to enter the rasa dance. This is what they'll tell about Gopeshwar if you ask the Brahmins from that side, because most of them are influenced by the Nimbarki teachings and stories. So they say that Lord Shiva, he wanted to enter the rasa dance, so he inquired how, and they said, you go across the river to Mansarovara. And you bathe the Mansarovara, because those are the tears of Radharani when she was in Man. She was sulking, in a sulking mood, because of being stood up by Krishna. And so she was crying over there, and then Krishna came to find her. It was related to rasa dance. And Radharani was crying there, and then Krishna came and saw her crying, and he became overwhelmed seeing her sadness, and he started crying, and the combined river there made this river of their tears, made this sarovara, this lake called Mansarovara. I said, you bathe there, Lord Shiva, you take a bath there, and you'll get gopi roop. So when you go there, all the pujaris over there at that Leela Stali, they say like that. They'll say that Radharani came here and cried and mourned in separation from Krishna. And Lord Shiva came here and bathed. However, we have our Sajatiya Snigda, our Sajatiya, Jatiya means family, our Jati. Our family of Vaishnavas are Gaudiya. We're Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So our illustrious acharyas, they explain like this. Sripad Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj, he explained that Gopeshwar wanted to see the rasa dance, and he came to Vrindavan, and he was stopped by the gopis, and then they said, well, you know, you can't come because you have this Purusha Abhiman, you have this enjoying spirit. Purusha means man in one sense, but Purusha actually means enjoying. You have the mind, mentality, Abhiman, that I'm the enjoyer. And that there's no room for that in this rasa lila, because this is the epitome of Krishna's service. The topmost devotees here, the gopis who have completely surrendered to the Lord's pleasure and satisfaction without even a drop of selfishness within them. So then they said, you have to go do some austerities. So he did some austerities, and Purnamasi came and said, what are you doing all these austerities for? And he said, I want to see the rasa dance. So Purnamasi took Lord Shiva to Brahmakund. Brahmakund is right next to Rangaji. The Rangaji Mandir. On the north side of Rangaji is Brahmakund, which is rather dilapidated now. But our great Acharya, Bilvamangala Thakur, it's said by some that he lived there for 700 years. At any rate, he lived there a long time. On the banks of that Brahmakund, meditating and writing, he wrote Krishna Karnamrita, which was highly appreciated and relished by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At that Brahmakund, and it used to be in better repair, now it's very heartbreaking to see the condition of that kund. So he bathed there, and he became a beautiful gopi of 16 years old. And then Yogamaya said, you stay here, and you hide in this grove, some distance, and from here you can see the Ras Leela. So during Ras Leela, one night, Krishna was dancing with the gopis. And then he stopped, and he felt that there was some stranger here. And then Krishna asked, he said, why today there's no taste in happiness, there's no taste in Ras or happiness coming from our Rasa dancing? It seems that there's some unqualified person here. So then the gopis, they searched in the different kunjas. And they found this Shiva and they caught him by the hand. And then the gopis asked, "Hey, Gopi, hey Sakhi, who are you? What is your name? Who's your husband? Where are you born? Who's your Yukteswari? Who's your group leader?" And Lord Shiva, he got this gopi form by the blessings of Yogamaya and Brajadam and his austerities and everything, by bathing in Brahmakunda, Dham, Kripa. But Yogamaya, Purnamasi, didn't tell him anything in the details, didn't give him any license or passport or voter's ID or anything. So he didn't. When the cops stopped him, he didn't have any identification. What is your name? Where are you from? This, that? Who's your husband? So they were like, "Where? You know, where's your home? Who's your? What is your gopigan? Your husband? Where were you married? What's the name of your mother and father?" But Yoga Maya had not told Shankar, so he could not answer. Gopishvar, he was not coming in a disciplic order, and he had not served any bona fide guru, so he could not answer. That's nice. He could not answer. So then what did the gopis do? They started slapping him in the cheeks. "You nonsense! And who are you? What's your name?" Just like if you go and get arrested by the enemy during war, you know, like you're an agent, and then you get arrested, you know, you get, you know, caught by the enemy, then they take you in, they start, you know, slapping you around. "Hey, what's your name? Where are you from?" So the gopis were slapping Shankar, and his cheeks were getting swollen, and they started punching him. And Shankar's mouth was swollen, and he was crying out, and Gopishvara started crying, "Oh, Yogamaya, Yogamaya, come save me, save me. I never come here again. I never come to Vrindavan. I never want to come. I don't want to take part in this Rasleela." So Yogamaya came and told the gopis. He said, listen, leave him alone. By my blessing, you know, he would never just be slapping him, punching him. "Help, help, Yogamaya, help, stop, stop. Oh, no. I don't want to come here. I don't want to see the Rasleela. I don't want to be a Vrindavan. Let me out of here. Let me go to Kailash. Help, Yogamaya." So then Yogamaya came, right? You call out to Yogamaya, and then she'll come to your rescue. But do you ever call out to Yogamaya? Do you ever pray to Purnamasi? And there's four devis. There's four devis that are very important to pray to in Vrindavan. You never pray to them once. One of them is Brinda Devi. One of them is Manasi Devi, Manasi Ganga. And one is Purnamasi. And the other one's Pataleshwar Devi, I believe, Pataleshwar Devi in Mathura. So these four devis, they're very merciful. Ladies are usually a little compassionate, a little kind. So we see that our acharyas, they teach us to pray, offer prayers to Purnamasi and Manasi Devi, especially to Brinda Devi. So Yogamaya came and said, "Stop, look, stop beating him up. This is Shankar." He became a gopi. By my mercy. So, and he wants, and then, so Yogamaya said, "He became a gopi by my blessings, and he wants to surrender to you and the gopis and Krishna so he can see the rasa dance. So please give him your mercy. Please bestow your mercy upon him." So then Krishna and the gopis accepted her and named her Gopishvar, Mahadev. Because the gopis are the Ishvari of that Shankara. So he is Gopishvar. Oh, that's interesting. Sundari Maharaj said like that. The gopis are his Ishvari. So in other words, Shankar, Lord Shiva, who is that Shankar, or Lord Shiva, who is controlled by, controlled by the gopis, is called Gopishvar. The Ishvari means the feminine controller. So the controller, that's interesting explanation of the name Gopishvar. So the gopis named Shiva gopis in his gopi form as Gopishvar. She whose Ishvara controllers are the gopis. And the gopis bless Shiva to become a guard at the rasa dance. Without her sanction, no one is able to enter. We can go to any, then Prabhupada says, and we can go to any demigod, Ganapati, everyone. But our prayer should be, please give us Krishna. Then it is correct. Whatever possible facility is available from any person, you beg for it, for Krishna's service, not for our personal service. Shiva became a gopi form, yet he still kept some of his abhiman as Shankara, this Purusha, this the enjoyer. So he became a chokidar. He could not enter the Rasleela. That's why we said earlier, he saw Rasleela from a distance. Because you see where the Gopeshwar Mandir is, where you all went today, I guess. And if we had the eyes of Premanjana, we would see that this is actually, this is the gateway into, because right where that's located is exactly the eternal location in the spiritual world, in Aprakuta, Vrindavan. That's exactly where Gopeshwar is. And exactly north of there, where the Vamshivad is, that is basically, you know, that's the exact place of the rasa dance. So he's not there, although they have some, in the Leela Stali, they have some deity of Gopeshwar. But he's actually positioned there at the temple of Gopeshwar. So he's seeing it, because he'll see it's a few hundred meters away, right? So he's a chokidar.